Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
Season 4, Episode 6 of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Old School Labs, Redcon 1, and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another edition of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I'm your host, John Hansen, and our guest for this week's show is Eddie Robinson, because we are talking about the 1990 Mr. Olympia contest. And Eddie was one of the most popular bodybuilders of the 1980s and 1990s. And Eddie was part of that 1990 Mr. Olympia contest. So I had a chance to interview Eddie a couple weeks ago out at his gym in Largo, Florida. We got to talk about his whole career, and we also talked about the 1990 Mr. Olympia. And he's got some good thoughts about training drug-free, because he said that, you know, he trained pretty much drug-free at the beginning of his career. He set the bench press record as a teenager, over 600 pounds, I believe it was. So we're going to talk to Eddie about that. And he said his physique basically was a result of great genetics, hard work, and a great diet. So we're going to talk to Eddie about his career in bodybuilding, winning the 1989 Mr. USA, and then competing in the 1990 Olympia, and then his career with the WBF, and also his long friendship with Joe Weider. I think Eddie was on something like 60 or 70 magazine covers, mostly because of Joe Weider. So we got a great interview coming up with Eddie Robinson. And then the following weeks, we're going to have Mike Christian on the show. That'll be for next week. And then finally, we're going to have Peter McGuff, one of the best writers in the bodybuilding industry. He's going to be our guest on the last week of this season 4 of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. All right, I want to mention that we are brought to you by Redcon 1. At Redcon 1, everybody wants to be a champion and everyone wants to be the best. And at Redcon 1, they believe in working hard to achieve your goals. Whether you're killing it in the gym or running a six-minute mile, Redcon 1 has something for those willing to put in the work. They have a premier clinically dosed pre-workout called Total War that is the perfect companion to your workout to give you that extra push to break through your mental and physical barriers. And then you can fuel your body after the workout with the revolutionary MRE. It is the only whole food complete meal replacement, with the protein coming from salmon, chicken, beef, and eggs, and carbs coming from sweet potatoes and oats. And it also contains 10 grams of fat from MCT oil. It's the best tasting complete meal you will ever have. So go to redcon1.com and try the very best that sports nutrition has to offer. Redcon 1, the highest state of readiness. And you can enter the discount code LEGENDS and get 15% discount off your order. So go to redcon1.com, enter the discount code LEGENDS, and try some of their products that they offer. Thank Redcon 1 for always supporting the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And we're also brought to you by Old School Labs. I've been with Old School Labs for several years now. This is a supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements for the discerning athlete. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. They are the brand that I've used to win the Masters Natural Mr. Universe contest in 2012, and I still take the supplements today. And they're also the company that sponsors Breon Ansley, who is the new 2017 Classic Physique Olympia champion. And they also sponsor Sergio Oliva Jr., who is now getting ready for the 2018 Arnold Classic. You can use the discount code LEGENDS12 at their website at oldschoollabs.com, and you'll get 12% off of any order. That's LEGENDS12 at oldschoollabs.com and get 1% off any order. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense. And as I mentioned last week on the show, they have a new protein powder at Old School Labs called Brawn Protein, B-R-A-W-N, and that is now available. So go to oldschoollabs.com, and they just had some real great deals on it for Black Friday this last weekend right after Thanksgiving. So go to oldschoollabs.com and check out their new protein powder called Brawn Protein. All right, I hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving was last week, and I got to celebrate with my cousin Terry and her husband Scott out in Madeira Beach out in Florida. They were in town from Chicago, so that was fun. I got to see some of my family and, of course, ate a little bit, but I'll be starting the diet. Well, I already did start the diet because I'm going to try and get in shape for next spring. My 55th birthday is next March, so I want to be in shape for the Arnold Classic coming up in 2018, and then maybe do some photo shoots right around that time. All right, I also want to mention my new books are out, Bodybuilding Heroes and Legends, Volume 1, and the MP6 Workout. They're both out right now on Amazon.com, and they're really selling really well. So thanks to all of you who have purchased the book. Bodybuilding Heroes and Legends, Volume 1, is, of course, about the old school era of bodybuilding. It's all these stories about the 1970s bodybuilding scene. I've got all the stories about Arnold and Sergio competing against each other at the Mr. Olympia, including their 1972 controversial Mr. Olympia win by Arnold over Sergio in Essen, Germany. That's where Sergio probably was in his best shape of his life. I've got the also controversial Tijuana incident, which was the 1973 Mr. International contest that was always held in Tijuana, Mexico. And Sergio was in the contest, and Arnold and Joe Weider were in attendance. And Sergio challenged Arnold to come up on stage and compete against him. So that's a great story. I got some stories about Frank Zane winning the 1977 Mr. Olympia. I've also got the story of the 1980 Mr. Olympia, the one that Arnold came back and won. That was also very controversial. And I've got the story about Danny Padilla winning the 1977 IFBB Mr. America and Tony Pearson winning the 1978 Mr. America. So a lot of great stories for those of you who are familiar with the scene or those of you who aren't familiar with what happened back then. You really want to check out this book, Bodybuilding Heroes and Legends, Volume 1. And I have some copies in my possession. So if you want to get an autographed copy, they are $30, and you could just go to PayPal and pay by using my email, which is proyou96@aol.com. Just pay $30, and please include the address you want me to send it to, as well as who you want me to sign it to if you're buying it for a gift for one of your loved ones who's a bodybuilding fan. You can do that. I have a limited amount of copies available, so get that as soon as you can if you want to get one of those. And I also have the MP6 workout available for sale now, too. And as I mentioned before, this is an advanced training program. It has 6-week cycles, so it's sort of a periodization type of program. The one cycle is for power, where you'll get stronger. And then when you use that, you can use that added strength to build more muscle mass by using the mass cycle. So mass power 6 is what the MP6 workout stands for. And that also is available on Amazon.com. So check that out if you're interested in finding a new way to train. Also, if you guys buy any of these books, if you could leave a review on Amazon.com, I would really appreciate that. That helps get the word out about these books and it helps to increase the sales. So you'd be doing me a favor on that. And also with this podcast, if you enjoy listening to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast each week, if you could go to iTunes and leave a review on there, that would also be great. And also, I'm working on a new book right now. It's called Diary of a Natural Bodybuilder, and this is about all the competitions I competed in as a natural bodybuilder going from 1991, when I competed in the MPC Natural Illinois contest in Chicago, all the way up to when I won the Natural Mr. Olympia in 1998. I always take detailed records. I have detailed logbooks of my workouts, of my nutrition, and I really studied like how I could improve myself, improve my physique as a natural bodybuilder. So that's what this new book is all about. So I'm putting that together right now. I'm working on it this weekend, actually. And so hopefully it'll be out pretty soon. I'll let you guys know on this podcast when it's out. But with CreateSpace on Amazon.com, the books are really easy to get up. So I should have this book up very, very soon. So I'll keep you updated on that. And I'm planning on going to Dave Palumbo's studio, the RX Muscle Studio in Southern Florida. He lives just a couple hours south of me. I'm in Tampa, and I think he's in Cape Coral. So I'm going to go to Dave's studio tomorrow, this weekend, and do an interview with him and about the new book, Bodybuilding Heroes and Legends, Volume 1. So if you're a fan of the RX Muscle site, check that out this week. He's also, of course, on YouTube. And we will have the Eddie Robinson interview that is on today. That will also be part of a video interview coming up soon on the bodybuildinglegendshow.com, which is our website. So be sure to look for that. That should be up probably in a couple of weeks. All right. We're also brought to you by Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. They have very competitive pricing along with their quality products and services. So those are just a few additional reasons to give them a call and experience firsthand what sets them apart from the rest. So you can contact them by phone at 813-922-8939 or email them at info@flalternativemeds.com. That's info@flalternativemeds.com. Or, of course, again, you can call them at 813-922-8939. Talk to Jeff. They are in the Florida area, but they will work with anybody in the continental United States. And Jeff told me that quite a few people who listen to our show have called him. So thank you very much for supporting Florida Alternative Medicine. And if you call them, tell them you want to use the promo code LEGEND and you listen to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and they will give you a free consultation. And they'll also give you 20% off any packages that you purchase. All right. So I want to thank Florida Alternative Medicine, Old School Labs, and Redcon One for supporting this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we're talking about the 1990 Mr. Olympia. And here's our interview with the great Eddie Robinson. Enjoy. All right. Welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends show. I'm here with one of my boyhood idols himself, Eddie Robinson. How you doing, Eddie?
Great. Thank you for having me, John.
All right. Great to have you on the show. I've been wanting to talk to you for a while. All right, Eddie, let's talk about the beginning of your career. I know you were kind of a teenage phenomenon, great bench presser and stuff. So tell us how you got involved in bodybuilding. What got you interested in
it? Joe Eater. That's quite simple. Well, you know, how did I get involved in bodybuilding? Well, you know, back where I came from, John, I'm sure you're a powerlifter too. I started off, my passion was being a powerlifter. Okay. And my goal, of course, as a kid growing up, we all want to play pro football. So, you know, the training came with playing football as a young age. Of course, my dad was a discipline sergeant, Camp Lejeune. Oh, okay. And, of course, you know, training was in my blood. In the mornings, I'd watch him do his chin-ups and push-ups at a young age. So when you see that, you find yourself doing it too. It's like, you know, what you're raised around. But, you know, my inspiration came from, you know, the powerlifting. I started powerlifting, and my goal was always to be, you know, the strongest teenager in the world. Mm-hmm. And my friends were like, oh, yeah, good luck with that. And, you know, through high school, you know, my freshman year, I was benching 300, you know, as a freshman.
Freshman, you were benching 300.
Well, you got to remember, I got the teenage world record at 575. Right. And also I went to 610. So I did take a teenage record of 575, a 510 and 575, a world record.
So what was your genetics like, Eddie, when you were a young kid? Were you just like a stocky kid, pretty muscular right off the bat?
You know, genetics has a lot to say to any athlete. You know, the foundation of genetics, of course, but main thing it is your upbringing on nutrition. I mean you got kids that are raised, I mean, you might be in a poor atmosphere where you can't eat the good foods in life, you know, your fast food that reflects on how you're going to be, right, as an athlete, of course, right. But you gotta remember, as a young kid, I'm from Akron, Ohio. I'm from Uniontown, Ohio, as I read. It's all Amish and Mennonite. Okay. So in all honesty, when you're raised around the Amish and Mennonite, you got to remember, they don't believe in pesticides. They believe in everything. If God didn't create it, they didn't eat it. So I was raised by everything organic, and I really kind of stumbled onto it, was lucky. You know, I rode my bike 5 miles to football, just like your dad used to say. He used to walk 10 miles uphill to school in the right. snow and rain. But no, the honest to God, I did ride 5 miles to practice football practice. Right. And when I'd ride there, you know, it was all farmland, and I knew every farmer. Mr. Yoder was one of my best friends, old man. He's about 67 years old. I was sick one day. This is how my nutrition, I'm getting into a story, how my nutrition started. I was sick one day, riding the thing, coughing, and he waved me. He goes, "What's wrong? You're sick." I'm like, "Yeah, you should be going to practice. You're sick." He said, "Come with me." He took me to the barn, and he had me drink raw goat's milk. He said, "You need live cultures. You have a sore throat. You need live cultures." He gave me some, this is what he does. He pulls his tin off the freaking hook in the barn, takes his hanky, spits in it, cleans it out, fills it up, and says, "Drink this." I'm like, "Yeah, right." But he said, "Hey, it'll cure it." I drank it. He took me out to the field, got me some honeycomb, stuck it in a mason jar, put the cone in the unit. Said, "I want you to take 4 tablespoons a day." Dude, 2 days later, I was fine. Wow. So this was like 8, 9 years old, and I was playing Pee Wee football. Now, there's where my nutrition came in. You learn young, live cultures was the key. Everything was organic. My eggs were organic. My chicken, my fish was all bought Amish Mennonite. Wow. And to this day, when I competed, My friends flew to Amistad, and I had my chicken and my eggs flown to me. Wow, Federal Express.
Really?
I absolutely did. Wow. It was cheap. All I paid for was for the shipping. I got my eggs for free, so,
right.
You know, because this is a hometown.
Right.
But everything started basically with nutrition. And I noticed throughout my career and my strength gains, it all had to do with nutrition, live cultures, and sound nutrition. So, you know, that was the key. How I got involved, of course, was with powerlifting. You asked me how did I got started. When I took my world records, that's when I got my call from Joe Weider as a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, he talked about bodybuilding, you know, where the money's at, not the money's at, but how to be more successful.
So Joe called you when you were a teenager?
I was 17 years old.
Wow.
And I was on contract since 17.
He heard about you doing the record bench press.
Of course. He said, how'd you do that, Those were the Weider principles, right? And I'm like, sign me a check, Joe. We'll talk about that. So it was the Weider principles.
Wow.
No, Joe and Arthur Jones were always a great inspiration for me. And I moved down here at 18 years old in Florida. And I was lucky to have Arthur Jones in my backyard here in Lake Helen.
Yeah.
And Arthur Jones had found out about me through Ellington Darden. And I was contracted with Joan for 2 years with the leverage line, which became Hammer Strength.
Hmm.
At the beginning, when me and Casey were training back in the day, it was called the leverage line. It didn't sell too good, but when they called it the Hammer Strength, every NFL team had it. And I was a guinea pig training on that stuff, and I got to meet with Arnold was down to train on the HIIT training protocol, too. He didn't believe in it, but
yeah.
I believed in it. I trained with Arthur Jones here in Lake Helen. Known Arthur Jones really good. We became great friends. I contracted me for 2 years.
What year was this now, Eddie?
We're going back in, I want to say, 85, 86, 84, 85.
Okay.
Somewhere around that era.
Okay.
And I'd drive up there and spend time. Arthur Jones was, I mean, everybody will tell you, he was a strange bird.
Yeah.
You know, he wore black pants, white shirt, black tie, black socks, black shoes. That's all he wore.
Yeah.
Except for his black shorts he wore when he went out to the gator pit and he fed his gators.
Yeah.
You know, I went out there, he didn't know what this guy had. You know, I'd be sitting in the back room by his gym and I'd see a giraffe walk by. This is no shit, John.
Right.
I mean,
right.
He'd come back. He had his own base there. He had his runway. He had these huge planes he gutted out basically to bring elephants back. And I was like, what the hell? He had a herd of elephants, he had rhinos, and it was like Jurassic Park. but the education I got from Arthur Jones was amazing.
Yeah.
You know, he had me doing crazy shit, John, like, you know, a minute chin up. I mean, 30 seconds up, 30 seconds down.
Wow.
Basically to overload the muscle. Does these protocols work for him? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
It's tearing that muscle fiber down with less time. And that's what the HIIT training was. You don't need to be in the gym for 2 hours. You get in there and apply yourself quickly, get in and get out.
Right.
All right? You don't overtrain. You're not in there all day. And it does, that kind of HIIT training really hit home with me. And I incorporated that. And my strength gains went through the roof. Not only through that, is adding that nutrition with that sound advice on the HIIT training,
yes.
Which I learned from Arthur Jones.
Right.
So how did you bench press that much weight at that young of an age? I mean, when did you start training, actually, like 13, 14?
When I start training?
Yeah.
You ain't going to believe this. Seven years old. As I told you, my dad was a discipline sergeant in Marine Corps.
Yeah.
Downstairs, we had a 50-pound little weight. It was like a handle they used on scales for weighing things, consolidated freight trucks.
Right.
It was not even used for lifting. It had a handle on it. My dad used to do one-arm rows with it.
Wow.
He had a dip bar we built off the rafters, a dip bar, and he had a chin-up bar. So every night, you know, before my dad took a shower and stuff like that, he would go down and work out for like 45 minutes or half an hour. And I'd always go down there with him, and he'd be doing some dips, and then I would grab a chair, and I would do them too. And he'd hang me from the chin-up bar. And I mean, I was a little kid.
Yeah.
Of course, most of the time I spent my time hanging from the chin-up bar, getting my ass whipped, because I was not a good kid. You know? But anyway, that's how I learned that chin-up bar, by getting my ass back. But that's basically how I learned at a young age, is watching my father train in that basement.
Wow.
From a young kid. So when I got about 6 or 7, you know, that's when I really started training hard with him downstairs, basically doing your basic dips, of course, and chin-ups.
Yeah.
And one-arm rows. Those are basically 3 moves that hit the full body, except for you're not hitting any legs, but, you know, that's where I got my foundation.
Yeah.
Right there.
Do you have any brothers or sisters, or are you single?
I have 4 sisters and 1 brother.
Okay.
I'm the youngest. I'm the baby.
Yeah.
You were the one that got all the training.
I was the one to get all the training.
Yeah.
That's it.
So when you entered high school, how big were you then?
High school, I was probably about a buck 70, buck 75.
Freshman, yeah.
Yeah, I was a freshman. I wasn't that huge, but, you know, big enough.
Yeah.
But, you know, I played football my freshman year. I'm going to pull Sean Ray. I was like the MVP, you know, football. I played 2 games my freshman year, got taken up to the varsity.
Yeah.
I played varsity football, ended up down my junior year getting looked up at Ohio State with a full-blown scholarship.
Okay.
I'm not trying to be like Sean Ray, but, hey, I got you beat, brother, on the stage and off the stage.
Right.
But anyways, put that in your pipe and smoke it. But anyway, you know, Sean, you're a great guy, great athlete. I respect you 100%. You're your brother to me. But anyways.
So you got all these offers to play at Ohio State, and did you take them? You didn't take them.
You know, I told Joe this when he said, I want you to, you know, compete, sign a contract with me. And I told him what I wanted to do. He sat me down and said, you know, you play that football, you're going to get your legs broken. I was a fullback, halfback, running back.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, you're going to play a season, you can be done.
What were you weighing then when you got to, like, sophomore or junior, senior year?
Probably about 210, 215, lean, you know.
Yeah.
So anyways, you know, Joe said, you know what, the injury-wise, where are you going to go? Are you going to be a pro? And my odds were, sign now. And I signed a four-year Joe, and I was with Joe, and I'm talking six figures. It was a big shit back then. So I'm thinking, yeah.
High school?
Yeah. I mean, right when I just got out of high school.
Okay.
That's when I started my contract, because I was going to go to college. I ended up coming down here instead and just focusing 100% on why. And a lot of people say, well, you know, it is hard to become a pro because it's a full-time job. You can't have a 9-to-5. It's very hard. Right. I was lucky through my powerlifting to get noticed and be picked up with a contract. And that contract through Joe and also Arthur Jones is what enabled me to do my passion, which was powerlifting and bodybuilding.
Yeah.
So when Joe said, you know, I'll give you a four-year contract with Muscle and Fitness and Flex and to be an endorser, I said, sign me up. Hmm. And I kicked myself in the ass because I wish I would have went to college and did my 4 years and had a big degree.
Yeah.
I'm always like saying, you know what, do it now. You can go back and do it. You know, shit, I might do it now because they're having a lot of fun in college these days. You know, it'll be like the Rodney Dangerfield, you know.
Back to school.
Two.
So tell me more about that bench press. So what was your bench press in high school and what did you get up to?
My freshman year, you see these seniors walking around, you know, back in the day they used to wear this. It said Coventry High, and they had a football. And in the middle of that football had their bench number, 150, 160. I had a 300-pound shirt, and I was like the only one in school. Yeah. And I was a freshman. Yeah. These seniors were like, you know.
Right.
So, I'm not bragging, but, you know, the thing is, I was always into strength training. And the thing is, I was not to beat somebody. I was always out to beat myself, to better myself, to be better than the day before.
Right.
And that was always the game with me, is not to please for anybody else. It was for my own well-being and for to beat myself. So that's basically where my strength came, is in the locker room. At lunchtime, people were in the gym, in the cafeteria. I took my lunch into the gym and ate my lunch and trained during my lunchtime every day at school. And I also trained after school.
So were you entering powerlifting competitions then in high school?
High school, not really. We do, you know, mainly thing I did in high school and after high school is basically arm wrestling.
Oh, really?
Well, that's right. You were an arm wrestling champ.
I wasn't making that much money. It's the only way I can get my beer tab taken care of for me and my buddies, you know. So we did every arm wrestling championship. And we always had, and up north in Ohio, and they always had arm wrestling, you know, gigs going on. You win $500 free bar tab. So on the weekends, everybody friends say, hey, Eddie, you know, this is arm wrestling. So they wanted a free tab. So I'd go up there and do my best. Sometimes I won, sometimes I lost, but you know, I started arm wrestling. So, you know, that's one of my passions were too. And I also went into World Arm Wrestling Championships too in arm wrestling.
Okay.
But the bench was your natural lift probably, huh?
Bench was my natural lift. And at the 575, I mean, the 575 was basically my teenage best lift. I did do a 610. I tried to go for a 675. I bombed out on it. I did do a touch and go with the 675 with a bounce. You know, but today, I mean, I look back then, I'm like, damn, you know, now I'm this shit. Today, I can't even come near getting that 500, 600. Yeah. Right now, it's maintained, trying, you know, and the thing is hard, you know, getting ready for the universe here is trying to get that kind of size back in. And you got to press some heavy weight. Yeah. I'm not at 100%, but I'm at 95, or not, probably at 75 of my strength.
Yeah.
So basically, is trying to put that mass on right now till the universe here next year. I got a year to do it.
Yeah.
So just some hard training, getting it back.
So, in high school, then your bench was 575, sir?
I got out of, let's see.
What was the teenage record?
Teenage record, I did, I think it was 18, 17 or 18. 18, I did a 510.
Okay.
And then I did a 575.
Okay.
And then when I hit.
As a teenager.
Yes. Okay.
Then as I got older, I think I was like 22, 21, 22, I did a 610.
That's amazing. So what got you involved in bodybuilding then? Because I remember reading an article and he said you didn't want to put on the little trunks. You thought it was a little weird.
That was my conversation with Joe. I said, Joe, I'm a parlor. He goes, no, you know, get bodybuilding, you know, you get into magazines and you make money and you get powerlifting, you know, you don't. So after listening to that, you know, I'm like, dude, my buddy, I'm from a powerlifting group. You know, they're all going to think I'm kind of on the other side of the fence if I put on the skibbies and go out there and start showing my, you know, goods and stuff, you know. But, you know, more I thought about it and started looking into watching back then was Plaid. Watts and Arnold and all of them, says, you know, I got the bug. Yeah. I'm like, you know what? And I started competing in the Florida, teenage this, teenage that when I got out. And I started winning my shows, and then I kind of made it my living. Of course, yeah. Joe had a lot to do with it because I was a contracted athlete, and I didn't want to lose that contract. So I did anything that pleased him. The good thing about Joe always told me, he goes, Eddie, I don't care if you win. I just want you to look the best you can and come in with a total physique. I want you to have balance, symmetry, in the aesthetics right. of bodybuilding. And he liked what I had to present. I was lucky and blessed, had an all-American look. As you know, the 87 covers, I made all yeah. the covers and stuff, which was what he wanted.
Right.
And this is what I wanted, is just to be able to go out there and do articles on sports nutrition and training and educate on, like I just told you, my nutrition aspect on how I got these gains through natural diet, through live cultures and
right.
what have you.
Right.
So that was my thing, was to get magazine covers and all that. And like I said, it was great. Well, Joe, he said, I don't expect you to win. I just want you to look good. To sell my magazines and sell my nutrition.
Right.
And I lasted for 17 years.
Wow.
That's amazing. So I got your career here. Your first show was in 1982, the Mr. All South, which our friend Pete Fancher puts on.
Right.
And you got second in the teen short. So that was in 82. So you were, what, probably 17?
Looked at you, 82, 17, yeah, 17 yeah. years old.
Okay.
And how'd you feel about that first show?
Like I say, first time on the stage, you know, I enjoyed it. You know, like I say, you're not used to being out there in the the Speedos and stuff.
Yeah.
You're used to being on there with a little chalk in your hands. And
what'd your physique look like?
You know, I was a mass monster coming as a teenager. I come out there and people, I just were amazed to see the bulk I had as a teenager. And from being a powerlifter, you know, I had big round muscle bellies, you know, from all the powerlifting.
Yeah.
And when they seen that, I brought something new to the stage, which people hadn't seen before. I came out there with some serious legs from squatting. Because I was squatting. And at the end of the day, you know, I got the 875 in the squat. I mean, Fred Hatfield said that. He was Dr. Squat, for God's sake, doing 1,000 pounds. But, you know, that was my training stuff, and I got the thickness all from that. And they were just amazed at seeing a teenager with so much dense mass.
Right.
And as I said, as you heard my history, I was training at 7, 8 years old with my dad in the downstairs in the basement. So, you know, it was all...
17, you're already training for 10 years.
Man, you know, exactly. So it's all about what you know, what you're raised around and, you know, your surrounding, and that's what it was.
Yeah.
So then in 83, the next year, you did the Florida, and you did the Southern USA. You got... third place in the middleweight in the teenage there, too. So were you better then in 83 than 82?
83, 82. I don't really recall then, you know.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is, I competed to compete, not necessarily winning stuff. But,
right.
You know, every year I was making days. The main thing was just learning the diet. I love to eat.
Yeah.
I was like a powerlifter, man.
Right.
I'm an eating machine.
Right.
And you take my food away to get ready for a contest is like crazy, you know.
Yeah.
cut carbs off?
Right.
Are you kidding
right.
me? So, yeah, you know, 83. Did you have the 83 USA and all that stuff in there?
Yeah, 84.
Yeah, 84 Teen USA. You got first in the light heavyweight. You beat out, Franco Santarello won the middleweights. He won the overall.
Right.
So that's when your rivalry developed with Franco.
Oh, yeah. Franco, I tell you what, he's a good guy. You know, I get along with street people. I mean, he's a street smart kid right from the frickin' out. Where's he from? New York, you know.
Yeah.
I remember, you know, getting ready for that show. His room was right next door to me. He's a cocky, arrogant son of a bitch.
Yeah.
But I loved him to death. I can't say he's a cocky, arrogant son of a bitch, but I loved him to death. It shows you my attitude. So anyways, he come knocking on my door and stuff. He goes, yo. I'm like, oh, my God. It's like fucking Rocky next door to me, right? I go, here we go, the yo shit. He comes in. We're talking about training and stuff. I goes, how you looking? You ready? I said, I feel good. I'm pulling my water. We're talking. We became pretty good friends. You know, he's my competition, and we're
right.
sitting in my bedroom. He's sitting there, and he lights a cigarette up and starts puffing on a cigarette.
Wow.
I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? So I pulled out my Copenhagen. I put a big-ass drink, man. So we got two different, you know, I'm a farm boy, redneck,
right.
and we got this freaking, so we hit it off pretty good.
Right.
But, yeah, Franco was a good athlete. I did beat him out of that show. It was pretty close because he did look good.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that's where I got my start at the USA. And that's when basically my career really started taking off in the publications and the magazines.
But in the teenage, he beat you, right? He beat you for the overall.
Franco did not beat me. I beat Franco in the USA.
In the teenage?
Yes.
Oh, really?
Okay. Because I had him down as a winner.
On what?
At the Teen USA, in 84. No? Okay, that's not right, then. And you won the Mr. Florida teenage AAU in 84.
Yes.
All right, so let's go to the Junior National.
Franco's going to like that, what you just said, though. You won. No, he didn't win. Do you look back? I'll post it on Facebook.
The internet was wrong on that one. So let's go to the 86 Junior Nationals. That was the big one. That was the one where you got national recognition. And when I talked to Sean, you beat Sean in the light heavyweights. But Sean said he knew about you.
Yeah.
and Daryl Stafford knew about you. So you were already a big name. As far as people knew that you were a big competitor to look out for.
Right. You know, a lot of people knew my name because I had this teenage kid out there coming out to this bench in 575, which kind of soiled their pants.
Daryl Stafford said, yeah.
Kind of soiled their pants knowing that he got, because I was an athlete. I wasn't built about drugs. I did a lot of drug testing stuff. My IPF records were drug tested. They knew I was a real deal coming to the freaking stage, not an anabolic freaking experiment. So, yeah, you know, I rattled their cage a little bit. I came in thick and hard, and I might not have been as cut, but I brought mass to the table. A lot of mass, and it was from natural, you know, hardcore training in lifting instead of drugs and depletion of water pills.
Right. So, you were 21 years old at the time.
Exactly. But like I say, with Sean came in. You know, Sean looked really good on stage. You know, I give the credit. He always comes in good. He's a good athlete. He's a good speaker, very intelligent speaking guy. Love him to death. He's a good guy. But in that show, I blew him away. I mean, he looked like a little boy out there. I mean, he was half my size. He might have been a little bit ripped, but you know what? He was puny. He was in my shadow. But he did look good, and he was symmetrical as hell.
Yeah.
But I give him credit for that. But him thinking that I was smooth and stuff. Well, guess what? My mass, my 575 bench, natural shit, blew them away.
Right.
Period.
How big were your arms in that show, Eddie?
My arms at that show were probably about 21 and a half to 22.
Yeah.
Yep.
I was actually in that show. I was in the heavyweights. I was a light heavyweight. I weighed 200 pounds. But I told my brother before the show, I go, there's two guys in the light heavyweights I don't want to go up against. And when he saw you and Sean, he goes, yeah, you were right. But, yeah, I was blown away. At 21, you had those the arms and the legs. It was like you had a man's physique at only 21 years old.
Well, if you look at the books I did with Arthur Jones, Big Arms, you'll see that. You ever, remember the one that said Big Arms? Well, that was where I had a 20-inch arm. I was 21 with 20-inch arms.
They measured it in that book, right? They had a picture of you measuring.
Exactly. It had Ellington Darden with a caliper because they were amazed with the girth. They said the only time they've ever seen this was with Casey Viator, who had such dense muscle.
Yeah.
And basically, John, where that came from was just a hard training at a young age.
Yeah.
You know, some people say, well, you shouldn't train. I say bullshit. Your body. I said, you can train. Of course, you don't want to go crazy as a kid, like, you know, being 7, 8 years old. Yeah, I probably wouldn't recommend heavy weight training then.
Right.
But a kid doing push-ups, sit-ups, and chin-ups like that, that's a natural type of range of motion. It's not going to hit your growth plates or anything like that. My daughter was doing sit-ups at 5 years old and chin-ups at 5 years old, you know. And my kids are the shits. They're strong, they're good, they're athletic, you know. And I think that, you know, hey, when the kid's ready to train, let them train. But let them want to do that. You know, that's the thing. Let them have that ambition to see it through you.
Yeah.
But that's basically where it began.
Why so thick? I mean, wide. They were, like, not just big, but they were, like, so wide.
And a lot of it's from the powerlifting. Because you got everything goes through the arms, so those arms got to adapt,
right,
man. Just like the silverback gorilla. Look at the size of that guy's back and arms. I mean, you'll see, you know.
Yeah, right.
It's all about what you adapt to.
Right.
And when you're pushing a lot of weight and you're pulling a lot of weight, your arms are going to grow because you got to go through those arms to get to that body part.
Right.
And you beat out Shane DeMora, won the middleweights, and I think Dean Caputo won the heavyweights, and he beat out Johnny Morant. So that was a stacked field.
If you looked at that lineup, that was some serious talent out there. Johnny Morant was huge.
Yeah.
He was like a Lee Haney back then. He was huge. Shane DeMora, unbelievable teenager. Unbelievable.
He won the teen nationals and the junior nationals, and the nationals he won his class, too.
And I think he was one of the youngest pros ever.
Yeah.
I think he was like only 21, 20 years
old. 19. He was 19.
19 years old. God's pro card. God bless him.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, what really I'm really honored about is be able to win that show with that kind of talent. And that's what really impresses me myself is like, hey, you weren't just going up against some rinky-dink. You were going back. All these guys ended up turning pro and becoming something huge in the field of bodybuilding, which I was very honored to be on the stage with those guys, even Sean Ray.
And Lee Haney guest posed that year. So did he get to talk to you at all?
I did talk to Lee backstage, you know. Lee was a great guy. We hit it off. We talked about training. Matter of fact, he came back 3 months later to Clearwater. We trained together for a couple months. Yeah, he came down on vacation, and I trained with Lee for a little bit, and he was showing me some. And Lee wasn't really a heavy trainer, but I tell you what, how he trained was so precise. The range of motion, the form was just so pretty, his movements. It was no bouncing. It was very strict, concentrated form. Bent over rows. Didn't go that heavy. I'm doing 405, 350. He's 2 1/4 and just repping up, but nice and slow and squeezing.
Yeah.
I learned a lot from watching him because he had a huge-ass back, and I watched how he trained. I'm like, and, you know, that's how you learn, John. You know, you see, even with Arthur Jones, Joe Weider, Fred Hatfield, the people that I train with, I take every little piece of information I give them and I apply it to what works for me.
Right.
And I was just blessed to have these people in my circle to watch and educate.
Yeah.
I talked to Rich Gaspar. He said the same thing. He said he used to train super heavy, you know, he'd bulk up. And then when he trained with Lee, he learned that it wasn't all about the weight. It was about feeling the muscle, you know.
Exactly. And I just posted the other day on Facebook, me and Richie trained. We did
flex cover, right?
Yeah, the flex. It was called flex covers.
Yeah.
And we did a grueling photo shoot with Chris Lund. And the first thing we did was I looked at Rich, and, of course, he looked at me, and I grabbed the 200 pound. He goes, no, don't do it. I said, we're doing it. So we were supposed to do, you know, your French curls and working out and stuff. So me and Rich, you know, he's a big name, and this is a photo shoot we're doing. I wanted to make it a good photo shoot.
Yeah.
And we captured two flex covers of some hardcore, and this was the real deal. This was no balsa wood freaking dumbbell.
Right.
This was the shits. It was the real deal.
Chris Lund's known for using real weights.
Dude, it was a 4-hour photo shoot. And I want to tell you, so me and Richie grunted it out, and those pictures that you see with our faces, that is the real deal. That was pain.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember the next day, we slept until noon. We got up, we ate till midnight, and we drank L.A. Try.
Right.
I mean, it kicked our butt. But that was the best training workout I had with me and Richie. And Richie's a freaking great guy.
Yeah.
I love him to death. He's a great ambassador for this sport, and he's real.
Yeah.
Tell me about Arnold, too, because I remember once you met Arnold, and Arnold said your arms are full of synthol or something.
I met Arnold back when I was like 17 years old. I was training with Louie in the gym. It was early in the morning, and Louie goes, Arnold, come over here. Look at Eddie's arms.
Louie Frigno.
Yeah, Louie Frigno. And he goes, those are balloons. He's got stuff pumped in his arms. He goes, those are fake. So, you know,
balloons.
Yeah, those are balloons. He got stuff pumped in. Back then, there was no such thing as synthol. We didn't know what all that stuff was. It was a hard training, you know. But he says, no, he's got stuff pumped into me, real stuff. He walked away. You know, that's Arnold, though. He's always arrogant.
Right.
You know, he's the guy, girl. I'm not going to go there. But anyways, he's a trip.
Right.
And I got to know Arnold pretty good. As a matter of fact, every time I went to L.A., Venice Beach, of course, I stayed at the Marina. And I stayed up, I forget what the
Marina Pacific. I'm sorry.
Exactly, the Marina Pacific. Of course, I had the top floor. I was pretty much lived there, but I'd meet Arnold in the morning to train. He is early trainer. He had his old blocky Hummer. He'd come, the old style Hummer. Came off the Marine base.
Right,
you know,
right.
He'd come pulling up and he would train in the morning. And you know, I got to know him good and talk. You know, about keeping my head on my shoulders and the sport and what it can do to you. Be smart about your money. Got a good education from Arnold about how to invest and don't let things get your head. And it was a good mentor for me also. And I was blessed to be 17, 18 years old to get to know Arnold and get to talk to him and hang out with him as a teenager.
Yeah.
I tell my friends, they never believe me. Oh, yeah, right, until I show them the pictures, you know.
Yeah, Arnold's everybody's idol, I think, you know. I think we all idolized Arnold when we were growing up.
Exactly.
So after that Junior Nationals, then you had to feel like, was your goal then you wanted to turn pro and be an IFBB pro bodybuilder?
You know, to turn pro, everybody wanted to be a pro or something, but really I didn't, it wasn't the biggest thing in my agenda. My thing was to look the best I can to satisfy Joe, because he wanted me to be the best specimen of man. And that was my goal, to become a work of art. If it won shows, great. If it didn't, it didn't. My main thing is, how many covers can you get? How many lives can you change teaching and preaching sound nutrition without the use of drugs? That's
right.
Why I went to the 1990 Olympia straight up drug free.
Right. Yeah, we want to talk about that.
My thing was, would you like to win? Yeah, but there's a lot of things I knew I'd never win in competing. I knew I never would win the Olympia. I knew I never would win the Arnold Classic.
Why?
Even with your genetics?
Well, the thing is, I didn't do. I'm not an insulin guy. I'm not these drug guy, and I'm not going to go that route.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2002, when Joe sold, I quit because I'm not going to do what it took back then to get on that stage. Because my day was now gone, and it came to too much mass. And the only way you can get that mass, people, and they know it. I mean, just watch the freaking YouTube.
Yeah.
How to use synthol, and if you got a lagging body part, put 500 cc's of synthol in it, baby.
Right.
Forget
right.
about it. I'm not all about that. It's
right.
not me. That's why I walked out.
Yeah.
So what happened in 87 then? I did an interview with Sean, and he was saying you weren't in the finals, but you said that you had something going with Arthur Jones.
I was training with Arthur Jones. We were doing two books that year. And basically it was the HIIT, high intensity training. And the only thing, you know, I went underneath Ellington Darden's wing then. And we went out to Texas. We opened a gym out there. And I was out there for a year training for this contest. You know, the thing is, you know, I got paid a good amount of money to do this. And that's the only reason why I did it. And I'm like, hey, I'm going to learn something, education. I'm going to put my career on the line going to a contest, letting somebody else handle my diet and my training.
Okay.
I only trained for 35 minutes a training session only 3 days three days out of the week.
Wow. 35 minutes each training session.
I tell you what, and that's what they said. That's all you need. And the HIIT training, where did, you know, I was under Ken Hutchison's. I don't know if you remember him. Worked with Arthur Jones, yeah. Elton Darden. Tim Patterson, do you, these remember these? They all worked under Arthur Jones for all the scientists, guys, gurus, and that's, and they even had my diet where I ate. It, you know, I agreed to do their philosophy on HIIT training. The HIIT, the training, that 3,500 was total freaking hell. I mean, pain hell. I'm talking leg press stacked up. I mean, we're doing such slow form, tearing muscle, you know. Mm-hmm. Did it work? It can work, but man, you need... I know what you need, but you know I dealt with that.
Yeah, you agreed to do this protocol.
Do it, yeah. And John, I'm out. You know, I used to sneak out of the house at 2 o'clock in the morning to go to the gym. That sumbitch had every gym within 100 miles sign a waiver that if I'd get there, they would be sued. I'd go in there and they were like, "Get out of here!" I'm like, "What, dude? Come on, I'm Eddie Robinson. You can't have you in here." Everybody knew I was under contract. What I was doing, they would not allow me because I was going to say, "Fuck that! I'm going to train at night. They ain't going to know about it." Right. It didn't work. It didn't work.
So the 35 minutes wasn't enough for training for a show.
Well, it's not only the 35 minutes. It's the diet. It's the intense type of training. You know, the training philosophy was good philosophy, but it wasn't, you know, I needed, you need more time in the gym. You need more days of the week. Because I'm a guy who trained, you know, during my career, I did three on one off. That's how I trained. That was what I was born. After talking to Arnold, not Arnold, but, you know, Arthur Jones's theories, talking with Joe Weider, I walked close with Mauro DiPasquale and Fred Hatfield. Yeah. And, you know, putting all of their training, all the powerlifting, the nutrition together, you know, it comes down to you need, that's where I came with the three on, three off. You know, giving the proper rest and recovery for that muscle, that body part, how they'll overload it. One day we do supersets, drop sets. Another day we just do straight on four sets of this. The training was always different, right, basically for more benefits. And also, you know, I had times where the you know, competing natural, you had to know when to take jacuzzi tubs, when to take a nap for natural GH release. Mm. And people don't realize that, you know, if you raise your body temperature by taking a hot jacuzzi tub in the middle of the day, you get a GH spike. Right. You train, you get a GH spike. You take a nap, you get a GH spike. You go to bed at night. So I'm getting 4 to 5 natural GH spikes a day without pumping in my ass with a syringe. And that's where I keyed on. And, you know, Fred Hatfield, of course, we learned this from the Bulgarian principles. Watch the Bulgarian athletes train in the Olympics. Why were they so good? Because they lived and slept. They knew when to take that jacuzzi tub, when to take that nap, when to train, all how based on natural growth hormone releases. Okay. And that's basically what I did. So to come back to the training, I wasn't able to do a lot of this stuff, you know, and the training was not enough training. I wasn't hitting the body parts the way I did. They only believed in a few different movements, you know. I believe in variation.
Mostly machines or free weights?
Well, of course, it was all Nihilist hammer strength. You know, that's
kind of like Casey Viador when they were training him, right? When that experiment, that Colorado trip.
Exactly. And me and Casey were together. Casey was here, too. Matter of fact, me and Casey were together a lot of time up in Lake Helen. And it was exactly like that with Casey Viator. And we all know the real story on that. Yeah. I'm good friends with Casey.
The Colorado experiment?
We're not going to go there.
Right. Okay, so you go in the 87 Nationals, and you didn't make the finals. Were you really disappointed with that?
I wasn't disappointed. You know, a lot of the people that knew me, Joe knew, they knew what I was doing. Yeah. They knew that, hey, you know, I got $100,000 in a freaking year's time. Yeah. You know what? I'm going to do it.
More than the winner.
You know what? Winner didn't get nothing. I mean, got a pro card? I mean, come on.
Right.
I did it for the money. I mean, I've been an athlete, you know. I got a family to take care of. I took care of my mother and family. You know, my thing is I do this sport not only for the health of it, but I do it as an occupation.
Yeah.
And you get an occupation, I believe you get paid. I believe all pros should get paid. So when I'm offered a six-figure contract to go out to Texas, and I'm like, whatever you want me, if it's about training, I'm in there. $100,000 a year, shit, I'm on it.
Yeah.
You know? And don't have to mess with my Weider contract either. Good. Joe didn't like it too much.
Right.
But there was a little clause in my contract that allowed me to do that. Next year he corrected it. And he didn't care about Arthur Jones too much. Those guys were head to head. But you know, I would sit with Joe in Woodland Hills, and we'd sit at the table, and it was like two little kids, and Betty would come out, "Okay, you two." You know, I got to be careful because I was under contract. I was like, "Yeah, Joe, you're right." At the end of the day, you know, but he didn't believe in Arthur Jones's theories, and neither did Arthur Jones here. But you know, they all had great theories on training and recuperation and overloading principle drop. You name it. They're all on the right track, just in different, you know. Joe often didn't believe in being in the gym all day long. He's like 30 minutes in, 30 you're out for 3 days a week is all you need. There's truth to that to a point.
Yeah.
I've done it. I've tried it. I've seen big results. I know that too many people are spending too much time in the gym. They're overtraining, not allowing their body to repair and recover.
Right,
you know,
right.
I've taken 3 days. I took one day and said, I'm going to take a break this month. I'm just going to train 3 days a week. And, dude, I gained weight and looked better than I did. And I'm like, hey,
yeah.
Sometimes through trial and error, that's how we learn. We look in the mirror and go, damn, I'm tighter, I'm fuller, I feel so much better.
Especially as we get older, too.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
a big difference with the recuperation.
Yeah, you stay in that catabolic state. You know, the main thing is repair and recovery is key.
Yeah, I think a lot of these young kids today, they don't understand that at all. They're doing so much. They're in the gym for hours. They're doing so many sets.
Twice a day.
Never taking a day off, you know, 6 days in a row.
And the thing is, what they're doing is they're actually melting away.
Yeah.
They're burning their wheels. They're in sand. They're not going to go in because that repair and recovery is the key.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the more the better.
Right.
That's with anything. And like you say, it's these kids with drugs, too, man. They're hitting all these drugs. The more they just, you know, it's
right off the start.
Right off the start, and they just don't get it.
Yeah.
And I hope that sometimes, you know, these guys can hear this and listen and understand this is the real deal. This is what it takes, I mean, to be a champion.
Yeah.
It's not about being a winner and not winning a trophy or impressing. It's about yourself, beating yourself, being the best you can.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, you got to have respect for yourself.
Right.
Who's going to respect himself saying, hey, man, I look good. I got zits all over my back. I'm holding 20 pounds of freaking water. And I just did 3 bottles of test last month.
Right.
Are you freaking serious at the end of the day? You know, that's something you got to live with.
Yeah. So let's go back to your contest history. 88, you go to the MPC Nationals, you go in the heavyweight class, and you get fifth place. I saw that on ESPN, and you looked amazing. You were huge, maybe a little off in the conditioning, but you were really big. And that was your big comeback.
That was the Nationals, 86 Nationals?
88. That's when Vince Taylor won, remember? Well, it was in Atlanta.
Right. 88 Nationals. That's, you know, I was still working with Arthur Jones back in then.
Oh, were you?
I was still doing the training under his guidance and stuff, which I wasn't. You know, main thing is after 88, I basically went on my own. You know, I took all the education. You know, I pretty much lived with Arthur Jones back in that time up there in Lake Helen. And, you know, just mastering the training protocols and seeing what worked for me, what didn't work for me, my body. Because everybody's different, their body structure, their body type, and the training. People are different repair and recovery, just like nutrition. Some people got to eat red meats, the protein. Everybody's different, you know. So I basically, through my trial and error, working with everybody, figured out what worked for me, and that's what I applied basically back to my 1989 USA.
Okay.
And that's where I came in balls to the wall, tits on.
Yeah. So 89, how did you go in as a light heavyweight? Because you were so big, did you just barely make that way in and then bulk up or carb up?
Light heavyweight, that's a good thing because this is what I did, and I don't recommend this to anybody. In the USA, Franco Santriello was in that show. And he told me, you're lucky you're not in my class because I will hand your ass to you. This is what he said as he smoked the cigarette. I opened up my Copenhagen, put a big dip in it, and said, you really think so? Because I'm going to spit my ass off all night and I'm going to get in your freaking class. So what I did that night, because I was only 10 pounds away from that class. So this is what I did, John. And
tobacco.
No, not only tobacco. I went to the 10th floor. I sat in that damn sauna and jacuzzi all freaking night long.
Wow.
And I pulled. I made that weight. I came back. When my weight in, I was a pound over. I said, how long we got to wait? And he goes, you got another hour. I said, I'll be right back. I went and I got every piece of clothing I had on. Mm-hmm. And I did the old wrestling gimmick. I was running up and down the fire for 20 floors, up and down, until it was time for me to go in there. And I was, I mean, you can see spit all the way up and down the stairs. I think I went through a can of Copenhagen. And I wanted a cold beer really bad. So anyways, I got back in, and I was not only on it, I lost a pound and a half. And man, I'm on the toilet, I'm trying to drain everything I have. And I went in there, and this time I went in there with almost naked. I went in there in my posing trunks, and I nailed it. And Franco Santriello was right there. He knew I was coming back. His jaw went. I can barely walk to the scale. I was shaking.
Yeah.
That's how bad it was. And you know, I wouldn't recommend that to anybody. It was wrong.
A little extreme.
But you know what? Don't tell me I'll kick your ass in my class because I'll cut my hair, do what I can to lose that extra ounce to get in your class. So anyways, the next day was the show.
Yeah.
So what do I do?
The weigh-in on Friday and the show is on Saturday.
Exactly. So what did I do? This is a good plug for Twin Lab. I got the Ultra Fuel carb up stuff.
Yeah.
A can of it. I took my gallon of water and I poured it right in that container, man. I was chugging it. I didn't care. I just wanted to get everything back. And, dude, you should have seen how I blew up. I was on that stage at 212, 215 on that stage the next day. And it looked like it.
You waited in what, 197?
197, yeah. The 212 the next day. And, oh, my God, and the muscle swelled up so big. My skin was hurting.
Yeah.
You know, I was so tight. Main thing, I just started monitoring the car. You got to remember, say, well, why can you drink so much? You would have spilled over. But you got to remember the science of dieting. Every gram of carbohydrates holds 3 grams of water.
Right.
So keep that water down low. Your body's not going to spill into the skin.
Right.
So I made sure all that carbs were in there high and the water was down to fill that muscle up.
Yeah.
And I was a balloon. I came out there tight and hard as hell. And it hurt. It hurt. The muscles actually, that's a good feeling because you know you're on. A lot of people, I feel flat. Shit, I feel like I was a Thanksgiving parade when the float's coming down the frickin' deal.
You had to feel huge on stage, huh?
I felt big. The thing is, I was happy. I felt good.
Yeah.
And, of course, John DeFendis was there, you know, the prior
the year before, yeah.
Right. And, you know, it was great. I came on good, and that was it.
Yeah.
So when you drank this Ultra Fuel, you just didn't put much water in it.
Give me a call. Ultra Fuel was the kid. Well, if you remember, I did all these commercials for Ultra Fuels.
Right.
I pulled it out. It was basically handballing. It showed me guzzling.
Right.
I did get Ashley get sick off that commercial pretty violently. I must have drank 20 freaking Ultra Fuels that day. But it worked. I mean, you know, the filling up the muscle stuff with the carbs and all that. So
that's amazing. And so you beat, Johnny Morant was a heavyweight, and John Sherman was a middleweight, and you won the overall.
The thing is, you know, Johnny Morant became a good friend of mine. But I tell you what. I remember looking over at Johnny Morant, and he scared the living bazeezus out of me.
He said he was like a Haney. He was like a big Haney.
He was bigger than Haney.
Yeah.
I mean, he had pecs that just looked like slabs of freaking beef. It was huge. Didn't look normal.
Right.
And he just has the freaking genetics.
Oh,
I mean, biceps were hanging. If Johnny, I looked at him, and I thank God he doesn't know how to pose. Because if this guy knew how to pose, he would have had my ass to him in that stage.
Right.
That's where he killed him, because he was slunched over standing on stage. And if he would have just stood up, man, he was like, it was crazy.
Yeah.
But Johnny Morant was maybe the only thing that I was really impressed with is Johnny. Mainly because I'm a powerlifter, I'm old school. I like that big natural size.
Yeah.
And he did his homework. He was a trainer. He trained hard and heavy.
Yeah.
I trained with Johnny a lot. And, man, it was nothing like him doing inclines 5, 550 on the incline. I'm like,
wow.
This is crazy. I'm loving it. I'm like, put it on, you know. Let's do it, you know. I know you can pull it off, man. That's why I do it with you.
Right.
But, yeah, he was the main one that really impressed me, Johnny Morant.
How did it feel beating Franco?
Oh, that was great. I looked at Franco, and if you looked at all the – I mean, there's a lot of clips from American Muscle back then with Lou Zwick, who basically was filming it. And you should have seen it when he's like this. I mean, I look, you know, like, keep puffing those Marlboros, brother, you know. And be careful who you bet that you're going to hand your ass to if I was in your way. Then, you
talked to the wrong guy. You threatened the wrong guy.
Exactly. But at the end of the day, you know, Franco's a good guy. We became great friends after that. And, hey, God bless him wherever he's at today.
Yeah.
So now in 1990, you start your pro career, and your first show, the Niagara Falls, you win.
My first pro show.
Yeah.
Padilla,
you got second place.
And, you know, the giant killer. I was scared of him because I was a giant back then. I didn't want to get killed. But anyways, Danny. Danny is amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, he's such a little guy, but man,
amazing that year. Night of the Champions.
The separation and the onion skin he had, it was, and just he had, I don't want to sound weird or anything, but he has a really pretty skin. I mean, it was, like, just flawless. It's just, you know, he had no hair naturally. He never grow hair anyways, but his skin was just so tight and hard and solid. He's like, it was onion.
Yeah.
And when he hit his bicep, it was just like that Robbie Robinson, looked like a freaking peeled onion.
Right.
Or, no, Bertle Fox, if you remember his.
Yeah.
It was just like that. And the separation of his legs. And, you know, I really didn't think I was going to win that show. When we were holding hands next to each other saying, man, come on, please, please. And when they mentioned my name, I was, you know, especially what was great, John, is that was my first pro show.
Yeah.
And, my child was there. My mom was there. It was like the best thing that could happen.
Yeah.
Best feeling ever. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. What did it feel like competing against Danny? Because, I mean, that had to be a guy you read in the magazines, right, growing up?
Danny was a legend. I mean, he was a threat to, I mean, Arnold and all of them. He was right with all those guys back in the day, you know. You know, you had Frank Zane and Arnold, and Danny was given, that's why they call him the giant killer. He's right up there with them, you know. And the main thing was, is just an honor, win or lose. I mean, it's just that honor to be next to such a
legend.
Yep. A legend that had the aesthetics and balance of a work of art.
Yeah.
And that's what I really respect is the word. Not a mass monster, just a total freaking work of art.
Right.
Symmetrical separation lines. It was just a freaking work of art.
Yeah.
Those were the days. So let's talk about the 1990 Olympia. This was the one that was drug tested, and it was the only one that was ever drug tested. So when did you find out that this contest was going to be drug tested?
I knew a year prior.
Yeah,
I was under Weider contract, okay. And Joe wanted to clean the sport up. Mm-hmm. And back then, it wasn't really as bad as, I mean, I hate to say it today,
yeah, right.
But back then, it really wasn't that bad if you look at what's happened today. But he Joe, you know, I was...
Wanted to get in the Olympics, right?
Exactly. Ben is one pushing for the Olympics. And, right. Hey, man, I wanted... I mean, we applied for the Olympics for so many years. Mm-hmm. They took ballroom dancing over bodybuilding. You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
And, man,
yeah.
What a fucking... What a smack
in... Synchronized swimming.
What a smack in the face. Right. And, I mean, we're busting our ass, but it was all the drug thing. And Ben and Joe had that passion, and their passion has been since kids. When Joe started his publication in the living room with his mother, started his first publication. Their passion was, you know, the ultimate being of man and to create the best. And and how to do this today was basically we need to clean it up. We need to start testing. So they talked about that. I was under Weider contract, you know. They said, hey, Eddie, you're our endorser for Weider Nutrition. You're going into the show. Do what you can. I worked with Diet Pasquale. Fred Hatfield was there at the time working on my diet and my training. I came in the best I can. It was my first Olympia. I placed 10th in that Olympia. A lot of the guys were on drugs. A lot of them were. You know, Robert knows that he had the blood work. I mean, the urine test.
Dr. Goldman.
Robert Goldman, right. He did a lot of my testing, matter of fact, for powerlifting and stuff. But he had the testing. A lot of people failed. And a lot of people wouldn't not get off this stuff, too. Even though they knew they were going to fail, they knew they couldn't do it.
Yeah.
They knew they were getting the smack. You know, so either it came down to you had genetics or you didn't have genetics. Did the quality suffer? Yeah, the quality suffered a little bit. You know, I came in just as good as I came in any other time. But, man, I'm going against the Olympians, the best in the world. It's not the USA anymore.
Yeah.
You know, we had, you know, Labrada, Haney, Richie, all these guys in there.
Yeah.
Mike Christian, all of them, you know. And I remember Sean was in there. He failed the test. I know there's a big old controversy over that stuff. But, hey, it is what it is. You know, it was the real deal. And I think a lot of them thought it wasn't going to be the real deal, that they thought it was just a smoke and mirror. Because if you read the IFBB rules and regulations, we are tested to this day.
Mm-hmm.
We're tested for diuretics. And I don't even think they're tested for diuretics. I never once was tested for diuretics the whole time I was there. So, basically, it was, you know, it's just... putting out there to make us think we're all freaking clean, you know, but far from it. But that Olympia of any time was clean, and, you know, that being said, I'm kind of glad I went straight up with that because, you know, it really sparked a lot of interest through two people that made my career really shoot. That was Fred Hatfield and Vince McMahon. Because Vince said, hey, I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to bring the best over to a new federation, and I need true genetics. So he handpicked 12 of the guys he thought, and I was one of them. And people bashed that. Vince had a great concept coming to that WBF. He brought the best. He wanted to make it more theatrical, more showman. He wanted athletes. And, man, those are the best days of my life. And only that is he treated athletes like athletes. Not only did we get huge-ass contracts, we were treated good. I mean, we got off the plane. We had a limo driver. You know, I wasn't used to this crap. I mean, Joe treated me great. Don't get me wrong. I loved him to death. But, I mean, this was like welcome to Hollywood, man.
Yeah.
This was the real deal. You got out and you felt like somebody.
Yeah.
You know, now most of the IPU guys, you see them in these freaking old, you know, these T. Michael baggy holes in the shit. I mean, really? They never dressed in press. We came out with suits, man. We came out.
Right.
We had something to show that we were athletes. We came off the plane. We were dressed and we had nice ties on, shirts on. We represented. And that's what that sport needed. And that's what it needs today.
Yeah.
You know, how many athletes do you see in Olympia get off the plane? What are they wearing? I mean, they're wearing Zubas, man, fucking from this back in the day in the old team, holy shirts. They look like some bum. I mean, so, you know, Vince was on to a good thing. He treated us well. And, you know, those were the days, especially very lucrative for bodybuilding. If it would have kept on going, bodybuilding would have been to another stream, and it would not have been where it was today because that was unacceptable.
Yeah.
That's interesting to hear you say that because I talked to a lot of the guys who were with the WBF, and they don't have anything good to say about it. They said, you know, it wasn't handled right. You know, or guys who were in the IFBB that didn't go over to the WBF, and they didn't nothing good to say about it either. But Vince treated you good. He brought you out on a plane, and he hired you, and I'm sure you got a good contract from that for the 2 years that it was going, right?
Right. I got a very good contract, you know, from Vince, and we pretty much all did. You know, the thing is that, you know, he had a lot of the IFBB, they did hate it, Vince. And why? Because Vince didn't pick any of them, you know, and they're like, well, screw you. I'm better than him. No. they wanted athletes. They wanted somebody they knew that could actually maybe get on stage and bring a total package without the use of anabolics or something like that, you know,
yeah.
and be able to have showmanship. That had personalities,
yeah.
and he wanted personalities. He made Hulk Hogan. He made Randy yeah. Macho Man Savage. He needed personalities, mm-hmm. and he picked, you know, Troy Zuccolato, which is a great guy, hell of a personality, the
yeah.
Southern guy. He loved
yeah.
the guy. I mean, he picked the great Johnny Moran, Executioner, Tony Pearson, the Jet Man.
Yeah. Now,
come on, think about it, people. The Jet Man, Tony Pearson, you know, Major Guns, Eddie Robb. I mean,
right.
this was
Major Guns. That's where you were, right?
Yeah, I come out with an AK-40, man. I'm shooting ninjas out of the freaking ceiling.
Camo pants.
Yeah, I mean, this is what the sport. We did our job. We looked good, and not only did the prejudging, which was the hardcore thing, but we gave an entertainment night show that you can bring your kids to and have a good time.
Yeah.
And that's what it was all about.
Yeah.
And it was great. And the guys that didn't like Vince that was there, well, a lot of it is because they lost their contracts because they didn't abide by the drug policy. And they're like, screw you, man. You know?
Yeah.
They said, no, you fail a test, you got 4 months suspension with no pay.
Right.
And a lot of them hated them for that.
Right.
I didn't lose one paycheck because I stood up for it. Of course, I was there. I went natural all my other shows. That was no big deal being tested for me. I had the squally in my back pocket doing the, you know, the high fat diet and stuff. I worked with all that, you know, the metabolic diet that he's
right.
known for.
Right.
And I worked with that and with Hatfield and stuff. So, you know, I was point on in that. It got to a point that even though the WF folded, I stayed on for two additional years because
oh, really?
I was the name for the ICO Pro. I was the ICO Pro Sports.
Yeah, I do remember that now. So even after the WBF was over in 2 years, you were still with them for two more years.
I got two more, the even bigger contract, and they all hated me. I wasn't the bad guy, you know. But I was lucky. Well, it had a lot to do with Fred Hatfield because, you know, we were friends. He was in charge of IcoPro.
Okay.
So was Dr. Pasquale, which was one of my powerlifting guys that helped me out, one of my, you know.
Okay.
You know, so I was able to go for two additional years as an endorser. And and I didn't have to compete or do anything. I just needed to go out and talk to, you know, your distributors and go out and promote. I was able to speak. I knew about the product, basically promote and talk about IcoPro and the benefits of using IcoPro.
Yeah.
So I got a 2-year contract. And I watched the guys that tried to get back into IFBB. Of course, they were not only fine, they had to pay to get their pro card back. I lasted 1 year with IcoPro, and Joe called Vince up and said, how much would it cost to buy Eddie's contract out?
Mm-hmm.
And this is good stuff. So, you know, I told Joe, I can't shoot for the publications, you know.
Yeah.
I can't do this. I can still do our contract with the nutrition stuff, but I can't do the publications because Vince had me locked up for my image and stuff through Titan Sports.
Right, right.
So, make a long story short, Joe Weider bought my contract out. He says, I need you on the Night of the Champions. And I'm like, oh, shit, here we go. I'm going to get my ass handed to me. I'm a traitor. I went to WBF,
right, right.
Wayne D'Amelio. I said, Joe, you sure about this? He goes, you need to compete. Joe says, just do what you do. Just do what you do. So I went out there, did the best I could. I didn't do too good. I think I placed, though, in the honor class, they had me at 8th. They had me, I mean, they were handing, you know, they weren't calling me out.
Right.
You know, I knew. I'm like, hi, Eddie Robb's calling. You know, the crowd were there. You know, they knew right. I was getting blackballed. But I didn't care.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, I got a huge paycheck at the end of the day. In the next month, I'm on every issue, every cover of every magazine. So you know what? You can have your first place. You can have your second place. I had the big contract, and I was the guy you've seen on the covers. That's all that mattered to me.
Right.
It sounds like you did really well with the contract. So let's talk a little bit about the drug testing, Eddie. I didn't realize until I talked to you today that you were, you know, you obviously have great genetics. You have a great work ethic. You started at a young age. So a lot of it was natural, and you didn't rely on drugs. And I don't want to ever ask anybody, like, what they did or whatever. I mean, that's up to if they want to tell me or not. But when you did that 1990 Olympia, you were completely drug-free. And what did you weigh for that show?
I came to that show probably about 215,
wow.
217.
Big being drug-free.
Well, usually, you know, I was coming in 227, 235, you know. So I probably lost maybe 10, 15 pounds, you know, the stage. And 10 to 50 pounds of muscle is a lot,
yeah.
in all honesty. If you put
yeah.
that, we're talking muscle,
yeah.
not talking water, you know. So, yeah, I took good. I wasn't as hard, you know. And if you remember the night, I had a standing ovation. If you
yeah,
look at that
yeah.
thing.
I was at that show in Chicago.
I, you know, the thing was, I didn't care what I placed. The thing is, I got to stand next to Lee Haney, Lee Labrada, all the guys that I loved to death watching their career.
Right.
I got to go through that freaking audience. And when I was done with my routine, I hit that ground, and I sprawled out, and I got shot, and I
right,
did my
right,
shit.
Right.
I got done, hit my muscle, and I said, thank you. And I got that standing O.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's first place to me, brother.
Yeah,
I don't
yeah.
care. That. The feeling of that was like
the audience favorite.
Oh, that was, I loved it.
Yeah.
And that was the thing.
Right.
That was the best thing in my life.
Right.
So now when you went over to the WBF, now I think in the beginning they weren't doing drug testing, right? But they established that later when Vince was having trouble with the wrestling. So then he brought it on to the bodybuilders, right?
At the beginning, we weren't drug tested. A lot of that was for our first test. We couldn't drug test. We had so many new guys come over that were actually loaded on the gills. There's no way we could really get them the... I mean, you can say we're going to be tested next year, but you need to take the right protocols to get off and rebound. You can't cold turkey anything and expect to compete. Yeah. So this is going to take you a year to kick back your own natural testosterone, right, your natural hormone level, because you know these jokers that are doing this... their bottle a week of test or whatever, that you get a cold turkey, you shoot down to 12, your testosterone at 12, man, you become a bitch. You be crying in the freaking red lights, don't know why. All right? It's going to take a year to get your shit back together. And that's what doing, you know, HCG and Glomid, all the stuff to kick your stuff back in. So, you know, a lot of these guys needed to rebound and come back up. And that's why the first show, where we really weren't tested. And you can see the big difference in the second show, of course. Yeah. You know, everybody looked kind of different. You know, of course, they basically weren't even back to their normal hormonal level. That's one of the reasons. Right. And you know, people say, well, why did Vince fold? The reason Vince fold is because the crap that he was getting. I mean, you got to remember, wrestling is his pet peeve. That's what he protects. That's where he's wrestling.
Yeah.
Now, when you got the IFBB and all the top guys going after his wrestlers, trying to set them up, and then trying to go after and have suing Vince for, you can't use this name of this show, or you can't do this or do that. It got to a point where Vince is like, man, you're taking away from my wrestling. You're starting to hurt me. And what do with your pet peeve? You protect it. You know, so basically, he had enough.
Yeah.
You know, so many lawsuits from the IFBB, so many lawsuits. He says, I'm done with this. I'm done. We're folding.
Yeah.
And he did that. Because you had, you know, people getting set up for steroids, his wrestlers and all that stuff. All this stuff was coming down. And all came from, you know who, the competition.
Yeah.
Because they knew, within time, we were going to be the head dog, and IFBB was going to die a fast death. And that's honest God's truth. Why? Vince had the money. He had the credibility. He had the syndication. He had the publication. He had everything turnkey. And he was the biggest threat that ever came to the IFBB. Not only that, he was entertaining, and we sold out the Taj Mahal, and we were on pay-per-view. Has bodybuilding ever done that before? Not in history. So that's why it came down. So what are you going to do?
So it was the IFBB then that...
Well, it's all the litigation. Law. I'm sued for this. I can't use it. And, you know, Vince is like, I got to concentrate on my wrestling, man. I got 20 gigs a week going on across the United States, and I'm getting hit. You know, after a couple of years of that, man, what are you going to do, John? Yeah. I mean, does this really make you that much money?
Right.
No. You know, but, you know, the thing is, you know, Vince is a bodybuilder at heart. He loves the sport. He loves Joe Weider. He loved everybody in IFBB. It's just that he became a threat, and that's when he was hated, and that's why they came after him.
So you think if he would have kept going, if he wouldn't have had all that, he would have made it successful?
Let me tell you what. Whatever Vince and Linda McMahon want to do, it will be successful. Mm-hmm. They are smart, intelligent business people, and they do things right, and they're good-hearted people, period.
Yeah.
Anybody that has that aspect and goes on and stuff, I mean, look at wrestling, for God's sake. It's huge today.
Yeah.
I mean, remember, he told his dad back in the day when they were promoting boxing, he said, I want to do wrestling, Dad. His dad said, no way, it'll never make it. So when his dad passed, he took that boxing, and he changed it into wrestling, and look at the empire it was.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, look at Hulk Hogan, Randy Savage, even back to Ultimate Warrior days. I mean, Ultimate Warrior. I mean, oh my God! I mean, it was unbelievable. You know what he did to the sport and what he made, and that, a lot of it was from Linda McMahon, which was a lot of the brains behind the company. He was very smart. He's working for Trump now. I mean, come on!
Yeah.
But it goes to show you, they're good people, and I think whatever they put their mind to, they'll hire the right people and make it happen. And they did. We had the best people working for WBF, publication wise, promotion wise, television wise.
Yeah.
It was a turnkey. And the main thing is he treated the athletes right.
Yeah.
We were seeing. He cared about it.
Gave him a lot of money.
Gave us a lot of money. Treated us like we had limos show up, pick us up at the airport. And even the athletes who had addictions, who had problems, he dug in his own pocket and had them taken care of. I know a person he gave over $100,000 to just to clean them up, just to help them out of his own pocket. Who does that?
Yeah.
I mean, most of these guys, they didn't give two shits about you because you will be replaced by the next Joe.
Right.
That's how the sport is and always has. It was different with Vince.
Yeah.
So the people who bash Vince, go right ahead. I have another story. Maybe you don't know the real story. Maybe you didn't get close enough to Vince Linda McMahon.
Mm-hmm.
But I know the stuff. You know, I've seen what happened.
Yeah.
So they're good-hearted people and good people.
You still close with him today?
Well, not as close, of course, but I used to see Vince and Linda at the airport once in a while and stuff. And, you know, every once in a while I'll get a card, a Christmas card. Of course, it's like the Joe Weider card. Everybody gets one. It's like, you know, all the crew. Right, right. But the thing is, they take the time out to really sign it.
Yeah.
And just like Joe did, he always said, I hope you, Karen, and Seth are well.
Yeah.
How long did you work for Joe Weider total? How many years?
We're going from 1980. 5, 6, all the way to 2002.
Wow.
Yeah. So you had to be one of the longest athletes to work with him.
I was.
Longest running athlete.
Besides Arnold, yeah. You know. But the longest paid athlete, yes. I was very lucky, you know, to be in it for so many years. And the thing is, I was a team player. You know, Joe liked it because I was nutrition. My whole career was based on nutrition. And he loved my stories talking about live cultures. I tried to get him so much to come out in line with live cultures and stuff like that. The thing is, the cost of it was so much to do. There was no return. Turn on it.
Yeah.
And that's what's sad. Good nutrition is very costly, and the market could not afford it.
Yeah.
The market one at that time is the dog food bag with the masking or 5,000 that cost $20.
Remember those?
Nothing in it but sugar. You know. But you know, that's where we're at, you know. So, you know, that's what it was all about. So I was very lucky to have those years. It was 17 years or so, something like that. But and the, you know, it was not the contract that was important. It was basically the relationship.
Yeah.
To be out there and sit with Joe and have arguments with him, and even have Betty come out there and say, "Stop it, you two." And Joe, I love Joe because we'd be up until 4 o'clock in the morning, like two little kids. We'd have the loop looking at covers. You can't do that. She's got a pimple. We can airbrush that out. Yeah, but she's not smiling. We're looping the covers for the next four issues down the road.
Wow.
And that was some good stuff. We're like little kids in the dark room looking at these covers and stuff. And look at her. Oh, she's showing too much boobs. That won't happen. No, we got to cover. It was good stuff.
Yeah.
And I you know, I would get anything to go back to those days again because those were the best. It wasn't the competing. It was just
the relationship
of the Master Blaster, the guy who's developed and be able to sit there and even argue with him.
Yeah.
You know? I went out to Birmingham, Alabama last week, and I got to see some of the filming of the movie they're doing about him. So that was really cool. Yeah.
Oh, really?
That bigger movie there. It's all about him, you know, from when he was a kid and started off in Montreal and started the magazine, him and Ben, and
right.
All the way up till
with his mom. I remember you used to tell me, oh, my mom would say, what are you wasting your time for?
Yeah.
Dude, he's out there handing them out, and look where he did what he did.
Yeah.
You know, preservation, balls to the wall, kept it on, and look what him and his brother did, right?
What a story, right? What a success story.
And the thing is, what an honor it was just to be rubbed shoulders all these years.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that, you know, at my end of my days, I can say, I'm blessed.
Yeah.
I envy it because I never got a chance to meet him. So, and he really was one of the icons of the sport.
Most definitely. Like I say, Arnold, the whole close-knit group was a really a great experience. Even Arnold with his cockiness and arrogance, but he was always funny. He would never hurt anybody. That was just Arnold. You know, everybody has their image, their character.
Right.
You know, even Lou Ferrigno had his. You know, and even though Arnold and Louie are really brothers, best friends.
Yeah.
When you see them in the gym, you think they're enemies. Oh, you can't lift that. You know, you can't lift that. You're weak. Even pumping iron, you're looking smooth, Louie. I don't know if you're ready.
You're not ready this year.
It was. I mean, that stuff like that. You can't help but laugh.
Yeah.
But it was basically love. They're just showing love to each other.
Yeah.
That's some good stuff.
Yeah, the golden era. All right, Eddie. Well, thank you very much for joining us.
Pleasure. Thank you, John.
I've been wanting to do this interview for a while, and it's been great hearing some of the old stories. You're one of the true legends of the sport, so I thank you for joining us.
I thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, thank you for listening to another edition of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks to Eddie Robinson for that great interview. And I want to thank Florida Alternative Medicine, Old School Labs, and Redcon One for sponsoring this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Join us next week when our guest will be the Iron Warrior himself, Mike Christian. And Mike, of course, was probably in his best condition of his life at the 1990 Mr. Olympia. So he will be joining us to talk about his career and talk about what he did to prepare for not only the 1990 Mr. Olympia, but also the 1990 Arnold Classic, where he competed and did very well in both shows. So join us next week on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. We'll see you guys next week. Take care.